I'm Richard Barbrook.
And I'm Fabian Tumsey.
And we're Class War Games.
Yes, and we're very keen to have Paul here, his first live broadcast.
Yeah, we're taking his cherry.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Oh, dear. We're going to miss Sarah, you see.
I'll be around.
Because she always can laugh when we talk about geeky males and things like that. So tonight we're going to start off with the news. Then we're going to have a review of a game called Zulu.
Which raises some interesting questions about wargaming in general, really.
Exactly, which is one of the reasons why we sort of reverse the order, not put the review at the end, but in the middle of the programme for once.
And then we'll move on to our game that we're developing, which is so much better.
Yeah, exactly. Called Uprising. And we want to sort of talk through, I think, some of the issues around the dubious natures of wargaming and the positives of it.
Exactly.
But first we should just sort of promote the fact that we next Tuesday, 18th of August, we've got a club night at the Flea Pit in Columbia Road.
Exactly. So Columbia Road's just in on the Hackney Tower Hamlets border.
Yeah, just a bit up from Old Street.
Yeah, quite easy to get to.
And we're going to be playtesting the Uprising game again.
Yes, and we'll get more onto that a bit later on because we've made big steps forward this last week.
Well, the other major piece of news is that Lucy Blake has updated our website.
Yes, which will be by now for at least 2 minutes.
Yes, it'll have gone
online.
And this includes, photographs of us doing events, our communiques and other text, and most importantly, podcasts of these radio shows.
Exactly.
So if you're feeling like you're missing us in between our programmes, you can listen again.
Yes, if you've missed a programme or fancy to hear it again, there they all are.
Okay, well, so...
And a big thank you for Resonance, because actually we tried recording a couple ourselves, but we found that coming in here has been so good, and we've actually, this afternoon, we came in early and we pre-recorded two programmes.
The next two were going out.
Yeah, and it was so much better doing it in here than trying to do it ourselves, so...
Yeah,
big thanks to you.
I think it's also the discipline of having somebody on the other side of the desk looking at you.
Exactly.
When you're trying to, if you start fluffing something, disapprove. So anyway, we want to say big thanks to Lucy for all her hard work.
Yes.
And check it out. Do check it out.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to sort of kick off. As I said, we're sort of reversing the normal order of the show, but we're looking at a game which I picked up in the Rye, a little shop. It's actually called Soldiers of Rye. Rye, for those of you who don't know, is one of the original Cinque ports in Kent. It's sort of in East Kent.
These are the ports very close to the narrowest part of the channel, and they were called the Cinque ports because they became quite crucial to the defence of England against attack from the continent.
Yeah, and there were five ports. There were fortified. Rye's quite interesting because it was on the sea, but it's now sort of the river silted up, so it's actually sort of some way from the actual border of the water. But it is a port still.
Yes. And it had quite an interesting history in terms of England's radical history, really.
Yes, because in the sort of 16th, 17th century, this was the hotbed of the left, East Kent. I know it seems amazing now.
Yeah.
So near where my mother lives is a church where Colonel Pride actually was the preacher, and he was a leading member of the New Model Army, and most famously led Pride's Purge, where they got rid of the Long Parliament for, as its name suggested, sitting around too long.
Yes. So purges, there's nothing new about them.
No, exactly.
Been going on for hundreds of years.
And it's a good old English tradition. And also in Hythe, near where she lives, it's got a pub, which has now been renamed the King's Head, but it's actually where the Cromwell's Commonwealth was actually declared. It's one of the seven sites where they declared the Commonwealth. So is this interesting?
They had good sense to do it in a pub.
Yes, exactly. Though I did joke to the landlord when I noticed this, and I said, is it called the King's Head because that's why the Commonwealth was declared, because they'd removed it?
I take it the joke didn't go down very well.
Well, the barmaid thought it was funny, but he didn't.
Well, there you go. Well, that's really touching on a bit how Rye is nowadays and why it's perhaps not surprising that a game like we're going to be talking about Zulu is the name of the game.
But from sort of 19th century onwards, it's a sort of military garrisons game. I mean, actually 18th century, because lots of the Napoleonic Wars, a lot of military people were based there.
They would want to make sure that nobody would be tempted to land and start conquering England.
Yeah, exactly. There's still all these relics of Martello Towers from when Bonaparte was threatening England, and also, obviously, the fortifications that were constructed when the Nazis were on the other side of the English Channel.
Yes.
So it tends to be, shall we say now, rather conservative with the big and small C.
Yes, so then when you found this game, which is produced for the, it says here, designed and created for Soldiers of Rye, which is a wargaming group, I understand.
Well, it's not. It's a model soldier shop and sort of. We were just wandering around Rye, as you know, spending a weekend with your mum, as you tend to do. And we're basically looking in sort of. They have this very good collection of 20th century antique shops for some reason, where if you want to buy, you know, your classics of modernist furniture or something, you can get stuff like that. But I just noticed this, and being, you know, a member of Class War Games, I can now revert to my teenage boy state.
With your mother in it.
Yes, her look of horror on her face. She thought that she finally, decades ago, got rid of my obsession with military. Now it's come back with the. I dragged her in there, and they did. You know, they sold some very nice little toy soldiers in there, which I bought. Of Zulu. And then I noticed they had a game, this game. So I thought, well, okay, I'll buy it and try it. And it's obviously, it's a very homemade game, basically.
Yeah, it's made by some people called AML. When you actually look at the game, you can see why they're a bit, like, short on providing details about who actually they are.
Let's explain what the game is. As the name suggests, Zulu, it's based on the 1964 film starring Michael Caine and Stanley Baker and Jack Hawkins.
Exactly. So it kind of reduces the Zulu nation to the film.
Exactly. And the Zulu Wars itself.
Well, when you look at how the Zulus developed as a nation, going back to the time of Shaka Zulu, which is a long time before this game was set, that's a whole different issue. This just really, it's the Battle of Rorke's Drift.
Yes.
And if they called the game Rorke's Drift, it would be.
But they obviously want to appeal to the people who've seen the film.
Exactly. And the film has been immensely popular. And in fact, I think the film has, you know, a bit like Eisenstein's film.
October,
yeah. The film has actually provided in people's imagination an understanding of the battle, you know, far, far more than anything else could do than people writing historical accounts and everything like that.
Well, it's the spectacle taking over from the historical reality.
Yes, and so this game continues
the myth.
The myth in that process.
And it's a, you know, we have to say this, it's a British imperialist myth we're talking about here.
It is. And I mean, they try and, in the introduction, the historical background, they try and introduce a level of balance to it, but because it's focusing on Rorke's Drift, which became a, you know, a classic of the, you know, and it says here, the stiff upper lip of the British, you know, dealing with Johnny Native. And this comes across in the game, unfortunately.
Yeah, because it's a sort of, the film, if those of you haven't seen it, it's a sort of cowboys and Indians film, but reset in South Africa. So there's a small group of heroic white people, like defending the wagon train, but in this case, a mission station out in...
Yes, and I think they're using tea chests or something, which they wouldn't have in America.
Yeah, exactly. and then the Zulus are cast as the Indians, basically, who get wiped out as they launch attack after attack. And again, I think it crucially, as you said, it misses who they are. So Shaka Zulu, who was the leader of the Zulu nation, who founded it, really, was often described as the Bonaparte of Africa.
But that was like, I don't know, what, 50, 60 years before?
Well, yeah. And, well, of course, jokingly, the South Africans call Bonaparte the Shaka of Europe.
Well, of course.
There is a very good TV miniseries that does actually have a much wider historical view, which I would also recommend. Those of you who've seen the Zulu film and want a sort of corrective, you should definitely check out the miniseries, which it has a much more nuanced view.
I think one of the reasons why Rorke's Drift became seized upon as such an important British victory is that it followed so shortly after the Battle of Zandelwana.
Excuse our pronunciation, all Safras listening.
Yes, where basically the Zulus defeated the British.
Yeah, and I know I used to live with an American whose father was Jamaican, and he said that when the film came out in the 60s, when they went to see it in the cinema in Kingston, everybody would get up and cheer as the Zulus went into action. Unfortunately, of course, the message, this is just, you know, this is coming out in 64, 65, just after Jamaican independence. So there's no doubt on whose side they were. And I must admit, as a boy, when I watched it, I did much prefer the Zulus to the Brits, who were all a bit boring, I thought, compared to how funky the Zulus looked in the film.
But the other aspect of it was that the film did characterise a whole series of, you know, the different officers. Michael Caine's first starring role really got his career established. And there was a certain character called, I think it's Private Hook, who was completely historically inaccurate. I mean, there's a big hoo-ha about this when the film came out, who's depicted as a malingerer who suddenly turns into a hero. And in, you know, the film played an ideological role of how to bring the dissident working class back into the imperial project, and that was completely fabricated, and that played a major role.
Whereas the Zulus are just a faceless horde, really.
Exactly, and they're just coming, and there's a few of the leaders is given some characterization, whereas amongst the British, there's historically, I think, 139 soldiers, but they're picked out in the usual style of like Hollywood films. Mm-hmm. You pick out a handful of characters, you present them empathetically, and you draw the audience into identifying with those characters.
And by definition, not identifying with the people who are fighting to defend their land against the evil machinations of the British Empire.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like if you had some aliens come along in flying saucers that could zap us, you know, how would we feel?
Yeah. Not to say that the Zulu nation itself was not exactly a sort of sub-imperialist power, shall we say, in Southern Africa.
They at the time, they were trying to... The British had Henry Martin rifles. The Zulu nation was trying to buy modern rifles. They had a certain number of flintlocks. In fact, the film completely underestimates the number of flintlocks they had. The Zulus were trying to buy modern weapons. And it's a bit like nowadays, you know. No European power would sell them modern guns.
But they had sort of begun forming a nation state, but they hadn't been able to take to the next stage of industrialisation. So unlike, say, guerrilla warfare in the next century, in the 20th century, where these peasant warriors would have had weaponry, or they could have even got it off one of the two superpowers if necessary.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, what you have in this is that the Westerners, the British Army here, are all have modern weaponry, and the Zulus are reliant on their assegais, which are spears, and their courage, basically.
Well, and their military skills, which had proved very effective for quite some time against, you know, they're
less organised African nations.
Exactly. And I mean, it's well worth reading about the history of how Shaka Zulu founded them and why he's called the Napoleon of Africa, because to see how he was able to bring that level of coordination and create actually a militarised society where most of the young people would go into the army, serve a period of time in the army, and then, you know, as they're quite effective, not so many of them die, then they could actually be distributed plots of land. And what they used to do with the
so it's very much like the French Republican Army, how it was one of the first mass conscript armies. So this is the comparison people were making. So if you can mobilise the mass of the male population, you suddenly become a very powerful military, rather than having a small military caste, which most pre-modern societies had.
Yes, and they also made it you couldn't get married unless you'd been in the army.
So the game itself, let's talk. I mean, so we think the game is basically ideologically dubious from the beginning, but we played ideologically dubious. I mean, we play Comrade Cobra, one of our favourite games, where you can organise a Stalinist purge. So it's not necessary. So sometimes it's necessary to play games about politically dubious things to actually learn something about them and to understand maybe how to combat those sorts of mentalities.
Exactly. In playing this game, I mean, I was...
Let's describe what the game is. Okay. You have a board of squares, and you have Rorke's Drift in the middle. You have 40-something...
You have 48 Brits.
Yeah, who you can either put along the perimeter or put into a reserve. And then you have...
96 Zulus.
Who you line up around the edges, and they just charge in. And they come in waves.
Yeah.
And you just... and then what happens?
Well, basically, you start off with as they try and approach, the Brits who are on the perimeter can shoot them. And the further away you've got to the roll of six, then a five or a six. And as they approach, it goes four, five or six. And the last one is three, four, five or six.
And then if any of them make it through this hail of gunfire...
then they can actually start hand-to-hand fighting.
But even then there is a disadvantage because the Brits are behind their tea chests.
Yes, and I mean, when they're behind the walls, the Brits defend with a plus three. Now, when you gave me the game, Richard, you actually swapped the dice for dice.
Oh, dear, that was a bit of a disaster. I gave it to him to test it out, you see. And I have a large collection of dice, and I have this very nice set of metal dice from Leisure Games.
Oh, we're going to talk about them next week, aren't we?
Oh, yes, we're going to have an interview with the very wonderful Sean. And I was using those, and then when I repacked the game up, I accidentally put in some dice where it made it impossible for the Zulus to win.
Exactly, and so I had quite a traumatic experience. This game was deliberately designed
to stop the anti-imperialist winning. Yes. Oh dear, oh dear. But if you, even if you're using a normal 1-6 dice,
the chances are very small that you're going to get anywhere.
So you have your 96 Zulus who basically all get massacred by a hail of gunfire and then the Brits defend. But if you keep killing, kill one or two per 96 you lose, eventually over 14 waves of attack, you should be able to win.
Well, I think this is one of the big... I mean, I tried it. I went through three cycles of this and then I thought, why do I want to do the same thing 14 times?
Well, exactly. I think one of the key problems with this game is... It's not just that it's reactionary in its politics, but it's not a very good game.
I kind of, and looking at some of the details on the game board, they don't relate to the rules properly, and a lot of them are irrelevant, and it's just confusing. There's when you have like the if any of the Zulus enter the encampment, then the Brits who are not on the perimeter can shoot them with a 5-6 chance of succeeding. But there's no line of sight.
I thought the real problem is if you're the Zulu player, all you can do is just move your forces in, and then if you have some survivors by the end, then you finally get to throw a dice and try and do some fun. Whereas actually, if you're the British player, you have the opposite problem. You spend all your time rolling dice after dice after dice after dice, which becomes a bit tedious after.
Exactly, and I suppose you know after a while, the Zulu player is starting to erode the British forces, and they start off with 48. And I suppose if you get them down below 40, it becomes a lot harder for them to defend.
Yes.
And so really, it's. I mean, I don't know if anybody gets that far. Three times of doing the same thing was enough for me, and I didn't. You know, I might have eroded them a little bit, but I didn't really want to know any more about the game. It's like, why? Why do it? Why not? Say thanks, Richard. Here you are. I gave it a go and
didn't work.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the key things about this game is that the mechanics have not really been thought through. Maybe because they want to recreate the film, they've actually not made a very good game.
That could well be the case, actually.
Because, like in the film, the amount of casualties the Zulu gets is actually exaggerated compared to historical reality.
Yeah, it's something like 350 in historical reality.
But if you played this game, they lose thousands.
Yeah, and I mean, it just seems that, you know, that if you look at the historical reality, all these people are pretty annoyed that the British invaded their country, and they just went at them, right? And then they realised it was pointless just because
they were getting shot down.
Yeah, and they weren't really able to achieve much with their mass charges.
Yeah,
and which had been how they developed their empire in Africa previously.
And again, that comes back to like the French Republican tradition of, you know, charge them with the bayonet, which is what Bonaparte had actually become the master of in late 18th century, early 19th century Europe. But obviously, as firearms improved in accuracy by the end of the 19th century, of course, this became something absolutely crazy, as people would find out to their cost in the First World War.
And, well, also in the American Civil War as well. So already that historical lesson, but to what extent the Zulus knew anything about the American Civil War,
So they hadn't studied the Battle of Gettysburg, you mean?
Who knows? I mean, presumably some of them had travelled, but probably not that many, and maybe people didn't believe them when they came back and told them what was going on.
So I think you could... Is it worth looking at this game then? Why are we talking about it?
Well, I think we're talking about it partly because it is, you know, we've gone through some of the critical sides, and any war game you could be critical about. Why are you making a game about
killing people?
Killing people, you know, the Cultural Revolution, which is one we're going to be reviewing shortly. half a million people died, isn't it? Is there something
slightly sick about it?
Yeah.
So why should you do that? Why should you play a game of, you know, cultural revolution, power struggles, or Stalinist purges, or?
I think that one aspect is, and I think both of the cultural revolution, the Cobra game, which you've mentioned before, is that they actually undermine the leading heroes. There's little in there's little jokes about them, and they are actually trying to like make them figures of fun rather than bogeymen.
Yes, demons who haunt still haunt us.
Yeah. So there's that aspect of it. And they can also give, you know, some understanding of what the conflict was about. And, that you know, there can be an educational aspect to the game. But this game hasn't really got that.
Well, because in a way, what it's doing is just perpetuating the myth in the film rather than trying to say, well, here's actually what happened in the Zulu campaigns.
Yeah.
And therefore making us understand it as an imperialist conflict.
Exactly.
And I think it's also, isn't it, that, you know, in here you're basically tempted to play the Brits, basically, because you're going to do more if you play the Brits in this game.
Well, yes, and if you play the other side, you're just like, oh, but you know, you just get bored with it in the end, whoever you play. I mean, it's
But I think that, but is there a purpose though of lefties playing nasty people like the British Empire or Stalin or, you know, Deng Xiaoping, these sorts of characters?
I think, put it this way, I don't see one of the things is some people only like to read political material published by people they're already sympathetic to.
Yeah.
And they're like, I like that. It reinforced all my prejudices, right? Whereas I've always actually read quite a broad range of material and lots of stuff I don't agree with.
Or violently disagree with.
Exactly. But actually, you know, I mean, regularly used to, back in the National Front days, read what they were saying. Read and then try and understand why they were having a certain amount of support from the working class. So that when you're producing, you know, propaganda to counter them, you actually understand what they're talking about and why people get sucked into them.
And so, you know, when we're doing our uprising game, one of the sides is the Catholic fascists. And we actually had we were doing some playtesting on Monday, and you were playing Dolphus.
Exactly.
So I have to explain, this game is about 1934 Vienna, the Austrian Civil War,
yeah.
The Catholic fascists against the Social Democrats. I played as a Social Democrat, played Social Democrat, and lost.
Yes, I mean, that's one of the games. The fascists do tend to win.
Because at the moment, we haven't quite tweaked it, I think.
Yes, and I mean, part of it is we worked out that because the game, it's a mixture of different other games. And what happens is you have various bases, and the first player suddenly gets they've got 24 pieces on the board against the other player's 12.
And they have an initial advantage.
And so, yes. And that can diminish over time. But
that's a classic.
Maybe it doesn't.
It's a classic thing of game development, isn't it? That you can sort of, we're sort of tweaking now the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
We think we sort of got that, haven't we? More, and we've moved on to the middle bit of the game where we're trying to work out why you should actually manoeuvre around the board and take certain pieces.
Yes, and I mean, what we've done is we're going to have a completely rethink of the board. What it consists of, we're using circles, and then some of them have like two or three circles joined together, which you can get three units in, and then they're all linked in a network. And you're moving your forces through this network. We've got main roads, which you can travel faster on because they've got longer pieces, so you can spin around the board on them quickly. And then we've got the side streets, and we're going to make the side streets a little bit more complicated so that if you get drawn into fighting in the side streets, you can actually get bogged down.
Which is historically accurate.
Exactly. And so, you know, we're trying to bring the different aspects in. And we want to have a game whereby it can be different each time you play it. There's so many options.
Well, in the actual 1934 conflict, there was various plans of the left to either take the centre where all the state power was or to try and hold on to the utilities and other pieces of the infrastructure. So we need to make both sides both play across the board. So it's interesting in constructing the board. On the one hand, you want to have a historically accurate map of 1934 Vienna, but on the other hand, to do that might not reproduce historically accurate strategies for the both sides.
or a good game.
Which comes back to sort of the Zulu, because the Zulu game we just talked about is a good example where, in a way, it might be historically accurate that the Zulus are basically shot down by lots of Henry Martini rifles, but...
Why make a game of it?
Why make a game of it? Because actually it's not fun to play, and in a way you're not really learning some of the lessons of history.
No, I mean basically you attack them again, and, you know, after three attacks, yeah. Are you going to go through for another 11?
No. So one of the things the game has to balance both being historically accurate and playable, and I think this is part of the construction of a game is very important, isn't it? Because it's sort of got dual function.
Yes, I mean, you know, to a certain extent, I would compromise on the historical accuracy in producing a good game.
Because
we're making a game, we're not making a history book.
That's true, and we talked in the other, you know, in previous show about this Triumph of Chaos game, which we were very enthusiastic when we found it, with this beautiful map of Russia during the Russian Civil War period.
And a massive selection of cards with
great
oodles of detail on each card.
And pieces that accurately reflected all the different combat forces in the Russian Civil War. But it was basically unplayable.
Yes.
And that seems to be... It sort of defeats the purpose of it in a way, doesn't it?
Well, yes, because otherwise, you know, if you're writing a PhD thesis, write the PhD thesis. If you're doing a game, you've got to make something which is enjoyable and works as a game. And, I mean, part of it is we've taken like a leaf out of Guy Debord's book or his Game of War about wanting to make a game which actually makes people aware of how those conflicts, you know, the different viewpoints that are right. The fascists play the game different from the social democrats. They've got different priorities. And that's actually useful. And it is useful to play the fascists. Because if you understand what the fascists are trying to achieve, if you are trying to stop fascists developing your community and everything like that, you've got...
Or just neoliberals in our case, maybe.
Well, yes, yeah. Well, you know, you can actually understand what they're about and see that when they make certain particular manoeuvres, actually what is the significance of that.
And I think on the other hand, it also, in a game, it has to, you know, but you are having fun and you do get absorbed into it, but in that process of absorption, you are learning how to manoeuvre and to fight and to actually struggle.
Yes, because one of the things that comes up in this game is the whole notion of kettling, which anyone who's been on demonstrations in London will know.
Recently.
Exactly.
And it's not a new thing, you know. Like,
no.
You know, so I think that's an interesting way that games can illustrate this. And as Debord says, one of the purposes of playing games is to actually start to be able to think strategically and tactically.
Yes, and I think that our game is actually trying to get that right balance so that actually, this is something he goes into in detail about bringing in at the strategical point, you've got the tactics right, so that you get the strategical victory, which overall ends up you winning.
Yeah, so in a way, hopefully people, when they play the game, will know more than they ever wanted to know about the Austrian Civil War of 1934. But on the other hand, they will come out of it without, maybe not realising, looking at the world in a more tactical and strategically better way.
Exactly, and I mean, really, I mean, what we found is that when we mentioned 1934 Vienna, a lot of people's faces a little bit blank.
Yes,
like they never were aware of this conflict.
And yet, it was one of the most important struggles of the mid 20th century.
Yes, I mean, it paved the way for the Anschluss, really.
And then the Second World War and all the rest of the horrors that we.
Exactly. So you know, yes, I mean.
So the double purpose, I think, is
you
the
know,
purpose.
Those who don't learn from the past are condemned to play war games.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. We're Class War Games.
Yeah. And
check out the website, www.classwargames.net.
And next Tuesday, Flea Pit, 18th of August. See you there.
Take care. Bye. Good night.